Greetings, good evening, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. This is your host, Lance White. Tonight's guest is Danyon Brinkley, an international best-selling author. In 1994, Danyon's first book, Saved by the Light, became an instant success. It was closely followed by his next bestseller, At Peace in the Light, in 1996. He has recently written the third installment of his Light trilogy, drawing from his personal voyage and near-death encounters, and it's entitled The Secrets of the Light, Spiritual Strategies to Empower Your Life Here and in the Hereafter. In 1975, after his near-death experience, he returned from the heavens with exceptional gifts and more than 100 visions of the future relayed by 13 beings of light within the Hall of Knowledge. He has spent the last 30 years in service to humanity with over 18,000 hours as a hospice volunteer, through three best-selling books, thousands of lectures worldwide, along with countless television and radio shows spreading the good news, there is no such thing as death. Before we all cross over, due to my lengthy introduction, let's get the real Danyon Brinkley to step forward. Welcome, Danyon. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's really a pleasure. You know, the near-death experiences seem to be a mem in my life these days, and they're absolutely fascinating. And yours, I can't wait to hear about yours. Would you start out by telling the audience, you know, what was your life like before you had it? What happened? And we'll take it from there.
Okay, my life before the near-death experience, I was a complete jerk. I had jerked them down to an art form. And I thought that you dealt with everything by hitting it as hard as you could and then see what happens next. And then I joined the Marine Corps, which means the more damage you did, the more pats on the back you got.
Yeah.
And then I kept working for the government, which is during those years of proxy wars, there was always jobs to do. And so then in 1975, I come home from Nicaragua, and I was sitting on the corner of the bed in the bedroom on the bed, and I was talking on the phone, and lightning struck the phone line and came down the line, blew the phone apart. It hit me in the side of the head, and it went down my spine. It welded the nails of the heels of the shoes to the floor because I had bass Ouijans on. And the nails, they nailed the heels on in those days.
Huh.
And they were over the nails in the floor, which grounded me. It threw me in the air. It suspended me in the air. It threw me back down on the bed. I was dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months, and it took 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself.
Wow.
And I don't know which was the worst. Having a near-death experience in the middle of South Carolina in 1975, or lying in that bed, waiting to die. No one had ever taken that much electricity from a lightning bolt and lived, so I became a phenomena to the doctors.
I can imagine.
And now people who, since there's cardiopulmonary resuscitation, since so many people are now surviving these kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
we're now in the National Institute for Health. We're considered a rare disorder.
Mm.
So they're doing studies.
Were you aware of anything that happened during that time, or did you just kind of go to the other side?
No, I lifted out of my body. I watched what was going on, a place I call the blue-gray place.
Uh-huh.
I thought I was the only person there. And it's the place you go just but when you're still attached to your this physical world,
uh-huh.
and heading toward the next one.
Huh.
And I watched them load me in the ambulance. I watched everybody work on me. A friend of mine came over. He was on the other end of the phone, and he was a corpsman, and so he knew what to do, and he went to work on me. And then they brought me back for a minute. I had pulse and respiration for a minute, and then they loaded me in the ambulance, and I figured I'd better go with me. What people don't really realize, Lance, is death is nothing.
Huh.
It's absolutely nothing, and it never happens.
Huh.
No one is ever going to die. It's just not going to happen. It's not a part of reality. And so what I did was I was watching the guy work on me, and he was working frantically, and then he had a little headsets on, and he said, "He's gone. He's gone."
Mm.
And I thought, "Gone where?" The lump's here.
Huh.
He's here, and I'm here. Then I heard these chimes,
huh.
These tones, and I could feel this. I was like moving into another dimension, and this tunnel. I could see it. It wasn't frightening or anything, but it was moving, and it began to pull me down it.
Huh.
And as as I was going down the tunnel, it was like I was layers of me, layers of personality and consciousness were stripping away.
Huh.
And I've looked always to try to find a word. When you have no language, I come from the deep south, and everybody goes to hell where I come from. You know, that fundamentalist rant.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so I've always tried to figure out a word that would describe what it's like to be in this blue-gray place.
Huh.
And the word is precious.
Huh.
If somebody wants to know what they look like or what they feel like when they lift out of their body, look up the word precious and apply it to themselves.
Huh.
And then you have an idea of what's next after you take this breath. This is what's next.
Huh.
And so I moved down this tunnel. I came into this place of bright, brilliant, beautiful light, but it was the most brilliant light I'd ever seen, because when the lightning got me, there was a ball of fire in the room, and it burnt my eyes so bad I couldn't see and I couldn't move.
Huh.
And as I lay there before I lifted out of my body, I was paralyzed and I couldn't move. But the moment I lifted out of my body, the first thing I noticed was I could see.
Mm.
And I could move.
Wow.
And so when I got to the end of the tunnel, I didn't know where that was, but I didn't care. Any place was better than where I had started from.
Yeah.
And so this being of light, the first thing I did, Lance, was I looked down at my hand.
Uh-huh.
And when I first looked at my hand, I couldn't see it. You know, still trying to acclimate yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I focused on it, my hand shaped out of the material, this silvery blue mist.
Wow.
It shaped itself out of it, and I had a hand.
Wow.
It doesn't look like your hand does now, because you're a lot prettier when you're dead.
I hope so.
And I could see it.
Wow.
But the moment I took my focus off of it,
uh-huh.
Then it just blended right back in. I was always conscious.
Uh-huh.
I always had consciousness.
Uh-huh.
But I just didn't. You don't focus on that body business too much. It's not a very interesting concept once you get out of it.
Huh.
And so this being came. And this being was radiant.
Uh-huh.
And it had form to it. It wasn't like me looking at me. It had form to it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, people are always given that being a name.
Right.
You know, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Allah, Krishna. I mean, I've heard every name you could possibly name for it.
Uh-huh.
But first, let me tell you what it's like.
Okay.
When the being came close to me, the way I would describe it is, do you know what the difference if you get caught by your father or you get caught by your grandfather doing something? If you get caught by your father, he's going to beat your butt.
Yeah.
If you get caught by your grandfather, you're going to have to listen to a little talk, and you could probably hit him up for a quarter after it's over.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot like being caught by your grandfather.
Oh, man.
You know everything's going to be cool. You know, he just has to kind of work his way through it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and tell you what you should have done when you were a kid, blah, 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 blah. And then this being, and then I had what I believe to be the most important single part of the near-death experience. It was a panoramic life review.
Mm.
And this is the point that where you really get a grip on who you are and what your destiny was, what you were doing there.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have to understand, you choose to come here, but more importantly, you're chosen to come here.
Really?
Mm-hmm. No question. There's only one way you get here, and that's that the divine architect believes there is no one better than you to, at a certain point in your lifetime, be the vehicle through an action that you take, that divinity can move from that world through you into this world.
Wow.
And there's no other way to get here. That's it. So
the divine
architect believes only you. Okay, and so what happens is you see your entire life pass before you.
Uh-huh.
You will watch your entire life in a 360-degree panorama.
My God.
You have never missed a thing. You know how many hairs was in the nose of the doctor who pulled you from your mother.
Oh, my God.
You know everything, every color, every label, every jar from the moment you opened your eyes into this world and partially on the way into this world.
Wow.
I mean, I can remember, I could see myself being born.
Huh. So there's no discontinuity between worlds. In other words, I've heard avatars or spiritual people say there is no death and there is no birth. So what you're saying backs that up, that basically we enter in through some kind of vehicle, through the silver cord or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, you have absolutely nothing to do with with what they call birth and death. Now, I think I now know why all those babies cry.
Mm-hmm.
When babies cry so much when they're being born, then they realize, what in the heck have I done?
Mm.
I've put myself in this thing, and what is it? And why can't I make it move? Okay, and that's, I'd be crying over that too.
So
when you get there, you know, when you're dealing with that, it's pretty amazing to watch this life review, because you see everything, and if you think you'll know it all now, wait till you're dead.
Oh, really?
Because at that moment, you begin to see what you closed off, and as you watch your life review, you also watch it from a second-person point of view,
really?
As if you were your best friend.
Huh.
Wow, Daniel, that was really smart. Wow, Daniel, that was a dumb.
It's really?
You looking at yourself like friends look at each other, and they tell each other straight.
Wow.
And then you literally become every person that you've ever encountered, and you feel the direct results of your interaction between you and every person you have ever come in contact with.
Oh, my God. Well, that must be almost horrendous.
Well, the first time it was pretty bad. Since I had absolutely nothing good I think I'd ever done in my life.
Wow.
And I had to look at it. I had to look at everything and feel. And people say, well, Daniel, what changed you so much?
Mm-hmm.
What was the point that changed you? I said, well, I just got tired of hitting myself in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And I got tired of all the ridicule and all the frustration and all the aggravation that I had created and caused for so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the greatest gift that I could have been given.
Mm.
And once that happens, then, you know, you get smart. You don't go back into those patterns. And you want to have a life review that when you start to think about it, you consciously do it every day.
Uh-huh.
But what people have to also understand, too, is this, Lance, that the judgment, the system of judgment we're all going to face is, after you've reviewed this life and had this life review, what happens is this. You ask yourself, if God couldn't come today and God sent you in the life you just reviewed, then what difference did divinity make?
Huh.
Now, right there, my life changed forever.
Wow.
You know, I'm still basically a jackass, but I'm a lot nicer. And I think twice before I really react.
Wow.
And then people always, you said 18,000 hours. I have over 27,000 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
I just won the President's Lifetime Achievement Award for Outstanding Volunteer Service.
Oh, how wonderful.
To veterans. And I've been with 367 people taking their last breath, and with the, around near 1,800.
Wow.
So there's two things that you can draw from that. Number one, am I afraid of death? No. Number two, why do I do it?
Yeah.
Okay, why? Well, reason number one is I miss that place. I miss it. I mean, if you've ever seen what I've seen, then you will miss it. And I guess the closest I can get to it is when a person is in transition, and I know where they're going next.
Oh.
And I can, a lot of times, I can feel the presence of that divine feeling that comes with the term precious.
Wow.
And you miss it. You miss it. And then number three, everybody has things happen to them in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really what happens to you, it's what you do with what happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And since I know what's next,
mm-hmm.
then I figured the best thing that I could do would be at the bedside to help those who are going and to help those who are staying behind.
Wow.
Because closure is the most important aspect in this life that we have, and I already know the deal. Because from being struck by lightning twice and then having open heart surgery from because of the lightning and then because of open heart surgery and having to take Coumadin, which is rat poison, I had to have brain surgery.
Oh, my God.
So in the last 32 years, I've had one death experience and one death experience and two near-death experiences.
My God.
So there's not a lot about it I don't know.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. I'm getting goosebumps right now just listening to you.
Well, but you know, we all have these things. And what we have to do is learn to do with what we have.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing, too, let me tell you this.
Okay.
And this is, I think, what everybody should listen to. I'm going to be every person that I ever helped. If God couldn't come today and God sent me in the life I just reviewed, what difference did God make?
Hmm.
Okay, well, what difference that God would have made if somebody didn't die alone? That somebody had a chance that they could talk it through, and especially veterans. Because when the talking's done and the preaching's done and the doctrine's done, there's just you thinking about where in hell you're going, not if you're going, but right. Where in hell you're going.
Right, right.
Because a veteran, you go back and you start to look at what you did.
Oh.
Especially combat.
Uh-huh.
And I see that I can make a difference, but when my life passes before me and I get a chance to be every person that I ever encountered and feel the direct results of my interaction between you and that person, I'm going to feel the happiness that person has that somebody cared, and the happiness that that person had that somebody came and took time, and someone cared about their service to this country. So, and when I decided that after 20 years of this, I decided to create the Twilight Brigade, which is now one of the largest end-of-life care volunteer programs for dying veterans in the United States, and I have over 5,000 people in 22 states who uses my techniques. You don't obviously and overtly know that I'm teaching you based on that there's a life after death, but what happens is people realize that there's a life after death as they go through the training and they become comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And they help people. So everybody has this. And this is in the 30 years I've studied death, and I mean up close and personal,
mm-hmm.
almost everybody goes through some form of this. And I don't recommend near-death experiences. I'd rather hear about it than be telling it.
Really?
But this is, they always say, everybody always says that you choose the life you're going to have before you come here.
Uh-huh.
And I happen to believe that to be true, because you design it both for divine growth, so that whatever it is that the spiritual world needs to take this rock, to turn this little tiny rock, and to turn it into and to turn it into a Garden of Eden, then what I'm trying to figure out is how much more I can do to help. People have to understand there's no such thing as death. And I always say there's no such thing as hell. There's just different degrees of heaven.
Interesting. Now, in between the moment of your death, was there any time that you were in darkness, or was it almost instantaneous that you were conscious of yourself being out of your body?
Well, I don't. You know, you got to remember it like this, Lance. I had never heard of this. I had no, you know, there was absolutely nothing spiritual about me. You know, I had a little religion, but, you know, by the time I was 7 years old, I knew I was going to hell. At least I heard it every day.
Yeah.
And so there was no mindset
that
I could use or functionally put it into perspective. But when I experienced it, the last thing you're going to think about in this life and the first thing you're going to think about in the next one is death. Death doesn't even enter into it. The whole conscious point of death is eliminated the moment you let that breath out and open up on the other side. Yeah, there's no, you know, you won't even think about it. You won't even think about being dead. It took me I didn't know until after the Panoramic Life Review that I was dead. I mean, you don't have a basis by which to look at it. You know, if you think you're dead and you're wide awake and more alive and more conscious and more focused than you've ever been, and you feel precious.
Wow.
Ain't death fun?
Well, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons why we supposedly drink from the water of forgetfulness. Somebody described that, the water that you drink on that side to forget what you knew or saw over there, because it makes it more painful. You want to go back so badly.
Well, I would agree to that, but also you design obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everybody, and anyone who's the millions of people who've read my books, then I tell everybody, the first thing you have to realize is that you are a great, powerful, and mighty spiritual being.
Mm-hmm.
And you have dignity, you have direction, and you have purpose.
Mm.
But when you realize that, you realize you're probably a little biggity, too.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a great, powerful, and mighty spiritual being with dignity and direction and purpose, I'd be a little uppity.
Yeah.
And part of the earth life is, you think that there's nothing you can get into that you can't figure out how to get out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I must be on a Jesus quest, because I keep thinking I can get up from the dead, and so far I've been doing a pretty good job of it.
Now, were those other, you had two more near-death experiences, were those all planned out? I mean, was that part of your planning from the other side, or did you get over there and do another life review each time? I mean, so, in other words, you had your lightning experience, and then you had your next near-death experience. Did you only have to review between the last one and...
Went all the way from the beginning again.
Yeah, all the way from the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, it starts... I went back through the exact same experience.
No, well, you must have known it pretty well by that time.
Oh, yeah, but what was so cool about it is I got a chance to see the good stuff I had done. I was proud of myself, Lance, because I had seen that even though I was still basically the way I am, I could see that the things that I focused on and the things that I thought about, they had changed. It had changed, and it didn't change because I was afraid of anything. It changed because I knew better.
Wow. So apparently all our thoughts, emotions, and actions impact literally everything else on the planet.
Right now, this conversation is affecting someone in Darfur.
Wow.
So I hope that the part of whatever it is that they're feeling, they feel our love and our support and our prayers, which is what I call willful conscious intent.
Yeah.
That they're fine, there has peace and resolution.
Yes, well, I agree.
I think those things all day. I try to write the books, like this latest book, The Secrets of the Light, Spiritual Strategies to Empower You Both Here and the Hereafter.
Mm.
After 32 years of studying what happens when people are at that stage. Okay?
Wow. And do you must see a common thread with all of them, right, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
once that happens, then there comes the joy of why the life is. And I always tell people, if you want to know why your life is so screwed up, you did it.
It's easy, right? You did it.
Yeah, you caused it because you think you can get, you think there is nothing you can get into that you can't figure out how to get out of.
Yeah.
And then no matter what it is, I mean, and I see some pretty tough times. I still go through a lot of stuff from health-wise from it. But, you know, it's all a part of me growing and me trying to better understand what my job is in making the world a better and safer place.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a beautiful wife who is as brilliant as they come, and she has a way of molding a lot of the stuff that we write, because we write together, because she's smarter than I am. But a way of molding it to where it's really heartfelt. I mean, I was really proud this year, Lance. We got our report on our website, danyon.com. And we had 3,200,000 and some odd thousand people to come and visit our site.
Wow.
And I just appreciate it. We write columns, and then we put things on, we put things on. If I get a mood, I have a section called That Ain't Nothing.
Uh-huh.
And it's just me when I get really mad about something. And I expose things on it, and I tell people about it, and then I have the world view.
Huh.
One thing that's kept me, one thing that's kept me famous throughout all these years was the boxes of knowledge, because after I had the Panoramic Life Review, I went on a journey to this Crystal Cities, and that's what I call them, but the Crystal Cities, you know, in the Bible it says, Jesus says, in my Father's house there are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place for you.
Uh-huh.
Well, that somebody has, Jesus must have had a near-death experience, because when I saw Crystal Cities, I instantly thought of that particular verse from the Bible, because here was these Crystal Cities, and they're on like mansions, and they were beautiful and majestic, and I traveled to one, and when I went into it, it was like plexiglass, little plexiglass block, and you could see the block, and each had a nuclei. It was like it radiated, and then I was looking around, and it was cathedral-like, like an old European cathedral.
Mm.
And then these beings appeared in front of me, and there was a 12 beings, and then a 13th being a little to the right of the 6th being. And this being, they were radiant.
Huh.
They're with honor and integrity and greatness and magnificence. The words are, I'm trying to give an idea of what these things were like.
Uh-huh.
And then the 13th being kind of designated what the deal was, and each one of these beings would start to glow, and its radiance would be the only thing I saw, like it was, you know, like it had a floodlight behind it, and it blocked out everything else.
Huh.
And then this box, you know, I used to laugh, and this box, it would come, and it would open, and it was like a little television, you know.
Uh-huh.
I used to tell people, well, you know, maybe I died and just went to the Radio Shack. And then there were these events. I never knew that it was going to be future events, Lance. I never was Nostradamus or any of that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know it was future events. It took Raymond Moody to tell me that.
Really?
He called me on the phone about, because I just wrote it all down, and when I met Raymond, we started discussing it, and I could just write, I would write about it and write it down, and then Raymond would look and we would talk, and these things started coming true. Chernobyl. But what was wild in the boxes of knowledge was I was literally, I could smell the smells. I was like physically there
wow.
in these events, and I could see a lot of stuff that now has come true. And I guess people follow and read. Like I have a new in the Secrets of the Light. You know, Saved has most of them,
uh-huh.
and then there's new ones in the, not new ones, but it's. And when you come 32 years of watching something, you have a better interpretation. When I first wrote them down, which is exactly, I wouldn't change it.
Uh-huh.
When I was writing, say, I wouldn't change them because I needed people to hear the story of what happened to me.
Uh-huh.
And then to move forward with as I was growing in this.
Mm-hmm.
And so from watching the timeline of these events,
mm-hmm.
Then I can see better what can happen. You know, I can look at the in between the lines and see what the cause and effect of a lot of these events are.
Can you share something about what's coming, say, in 2008 or a lot of people?
Well, I mean, 2008. These next 4 years are the end of the procession through the. To the constellation,
mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm.
And it's like the Mayan calendar, and this will be a really rocky time.
Mm.
We will have a lot of unsettling issues, a lot of conflicts, a lot of world conflicts, a lot of things are going to come to pass
mm-hmm.
that most of us are not preparing for,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
okay, and then there will be some form of epidemic.
Okay.
I don't think it'll be a pandemic. I don't think it'll be like... West Nile virus or bird flu or something, but there'll be something that is going to startle us. I don't think anything could startle us more than a genocide in Africa and the places we're doing it, but I got a feeling that it is.
Okay.
Okay, and another thing is, in this next 2 years, if we're not really smart,
mm-hmm.
we will find ourselves in a world war.
So that still is a possibility.
Oh, there's no question in my mind.
Wow.
I mean, literally, we're creating it. You know when you hear the government say a worldwide war on terror?
Yes.
They're already creating that global perspective by which to create it.
Exactly.
And I don't trust anything they say or do.
I don't either. Amen.
I mean, they're liars, and the only way you can, and I believe this sincerely, Lance, because... when you end the 26,000-year cycle
mm-hmm.
and you move to what's called the galactic center, our solar system, which is a little tiny blimp in mm-hmm. a galaxy we call the Milky Way, and we're in with 1,100,000,000 more planets and stars.
Mm-hmm.
But the sun moves and the Earth moves into the center of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So that means there is nothing blocking the cosmic movement for change, you know, the dawn of the Aquarian Age,
right.
those things we've always philosophically or mythologically brought into play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these things are going to happen. And by keeping you terrified, in order for the new to live, the old must pass away. And by keeping you terrified and keeping us fear-based with the worldwide war or whatever it is,
uh-huh.
then you miss the subtle beauty of the energy that's passing that creates all the opportunities.
Wow.
I believe there will be more psychics and more people communicating with other dimensions,
uh-huh.
both what we call talking to the dead, as well as empathic comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
And this will happen because it's nothing we're doing. It's this wave of energy that's going to move, and the only thing that keeps you from perceiving it and taking comfort in watching to realize that we're multidimensional is to keep you terrified.
I totally agree with what you're saying. I had never heard anybody who had been to the other side actually validate that the Mayan prophecies and those particular calendrical dates, for instance, we're in the fifth night, I believe, yes?
Yeah, I mean, we're there now.
Yeah, that those are actual realities. From seeing it from the other side.
If you look at the Mayan calendar, you see it's a hologram. And once you start to look at it from a spiritual point of view, and as opposed from the like the Gregorian calendar,
right,
the Sumerian
right.
calendar.
Right.
And I go there all the time. Catherine and I, you know, I do you know, I'm funny, Lance, because, you know, I always say, what are they going to do, kill me? Well, big deal.
Right, right.
That isn't anything.
Right.
And so I take people all over the world.
Huh.
I call them the kick the tires tour.
Yeah, really?
Like you're buying a used car. I said, you know, we hear all those stories.
Yeah.
Well, let's go down there. Kick the tires.
Wow.
And it's amazing what our tours are like. We've been really successful. I've been everywhere. But I take only 25 people, so it stays personal.
Uh-huh.
And Catherine and I live, eat, and breathe with everybody all day, every day. And you go as a Mayan.
Uh-huh.
We chart everybody under the Mayan calendar, and then each day as we go to the sites that are basically based on that particular influence of who that person is,
You
think like a Mayan would think. The day is broken down in those sections, and, you know, there's 13 components to the calendar. And you think like a Mayan, and at the end of the day, the conversations that you would think the straightest people in the world have would not have. You can't believe it.
Huh, interesting. Well, then, so many people in the New Age movement are clocking this, and they say that there is a wave of energy or a great shift that's coming around 2012. Now, is that what's actually going to happen to us in physical
well,
bodies?
Well, I think it's coming a little before that.
Well, I would agree, but
I think the shift has already begun, and it's 5,000 years.
Mm.
Just 2012 ends the 5,000-year part of the calendar.
Uh-huh.
But I, from looking at this and spending so much time in Mexico and Guatemala and all in the Yucatan, I really believe it's going to be 2011
mm-hmm.
in October.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just the absorption to 2012. But all of this goes to around 2014 because that's when all the visions end. There was nothing that I saw after 2014, so I'll probably be gone again.
Huh.
You know, it'll be this time they will never get me back down that tunnel.
Well, supposedly this is the end of time. You know, this is the end time. Is that accurate?
Well, you mean from a Christian point of view?
Well, I suppose all those prophecies tie into each other, don't they?
No, a lot of it's. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be read into it. Okay, I'm agreeing with that, but.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the end times from a Christian point of view, all you have to do is watch Tony Blair.
Hmm.
I mean, the uniting of the Holy Roman Empire. Tony Blair became a Catholic.
Yes.
And now he got appointed to the High Commission, and he will soon be the president of the European Common Market. So the Holy Roman Empire is in place, and he's been chosen as the designated player for the six major powers who are trying to settle the Palestinian-Israeli issue.
Uh-huh.
So everything that the Bible and the Book of Revelation says is happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just read today that the major governments already know this. They've known it for decades, and they're quietly preparing underground bunkers, as well as a blast-proof seed bank in Sweden. So if that's the truth, then, you know... We're kind of the last ones to find out, I guess.
Yeah, but this is going to happen. There will be, I don't think it's going to be a polar shift.
No.
I think it's going to, because of the nature of the solar flares, I think it's going to be electromagnetic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the most powerful solar flares ever is in 2010, which will literally affect communications and all of those kinds of things. But these things come about that has nothing to do with us.
Uh-huh.
The universe is unfolding, Lance, just like we are growing and unfolding.
Okay.
And it's all on its own divine mission.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And what people have to do is be smart. You know, I have a place to run to, and we think about it every day, me and Kat, kids and stuff, and we think about it. I'm not going to be left sitting there holding the bag. I'm too smart for that. I've been through too much, and I believe these visions because I might have missed it. Like, I would think it would be before 2000, and it happened in 2001. But the beings of light always told me nothing was carved in stone.
Uh-huh.
So why I do radio shows and why I do these things, you know, I have like a real job. And I do this stuff on the side first because this supports the Twilight Brigade, which is the mark I want to leave. And it gives me a chance to get the message and to reduce the fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was afraid of any part of it, why would I be a hospice volunteer?
Right, right.
You know, and I think that I'm trying to be a living proof that first, take a hold of your life, everybody.
Mm.
Make a list of the things that you want. You teach best what you most need to learn. Mine is being patient and to learn to listen. And when you're at the bedside, that is the greatest teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Being patient and learning to listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is where I find the moments, and I feel like I can give a family and people what I didn't have and what I learned. You know, I always say this. One day I never believed a word of it. The next day I was dead, and the day after that I became everything I never believed.
Wow.
And I walk down halls in hospitals, and I see dead people all the time walking around in the hallways.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't have a mechanical ability to narrow my perspective.
Huh.
And what's the most interesting about it is that, number one, they're amazed that I can see them and hear them.
Uh-huh.
And they're more interested in that than they are in the fact that they're dead. But they choose to stay.
Huh.
In this blue-gray place, the third near-death experience, Lance, wasn't like the first two.
Okay.
The first two, I floated above myself.
Mm-hmm.
Lightning and the open-heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Then the brain surgery, because they only gave me an 8% chance of surviving it, and I went into the surgery, and then when I came out, I spent 41 hours in recovery.
Wow.
And then I had a massive grand mal seizure and went into cardiac arrest and had to put me in the neurocardiac ward. Nobody survives that.
Huh.
And so they just wait for you to have a stroke or a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole key was that when you start to look at it, I was in this blue-gray place the first two times. I thought it was just me, and the pattern of the near-death experience was basically the same.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but in this one, I came out of my body. I don't remember coming out, but I came out of my body, and I was standing at the foot of the bed.
Uh-huh.
And as I was standing there, I started to realize there were more people in the blue-gray place and more places in the blue-gray place than I did the first time. This is why I wrote The Secrets of the Light.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wrote Saved and at Peace, first what happened to me, and at peace was the mechanics I was going to use to fulfill what I thought was my destiny then.
Uh-huh.
But in this third one, I could see that there were people who didn't go down the tunnel.
Oh.
For a lot of reasons. And a lot of them were veterans, which is why I created the Twilight Brigade.
Oh.
And then there were people who were just aggravating old bastards.
Well,
that's what they were.
Yeah, just being
and they kept perpetuating their own evil or whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
And then there were people who had been abused. And there were women in groups, and I mean, some of these, the clothing, I could, this clothing, it would go back to like the 12 or 1300s.
Huh.
Because I watch apparel, and then I can always look up what the style was in what particular period.
Oh, yeah.
And that these people were women who had allowed themselves in the name of love go through a lot of abuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had deemed themselves not worthy.
Huh.
And so I always started supporting defense against
abuse.
Against women's abuse and child abuse.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I'm a big advocate of that with Catherine, and the things that I have learned, I've learned to truly put into play. And the other thing too is people need to really focus on gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Gratitude is the most powerful thing. I do a whole section on The Secrets of the Light about it. When you go 32 years of studying death, there's a lot of little things that you pick up that you don't ever think about in the course of it. And I just have spent so much time there that I see things that I think I can help people with. That's why I write the book. You know, and I'm funny. You know, I don't care.
Uh-huh.
No, you know, it don't scare me.
Yeah.
And so I think that I can help people with the book, and so far it's been It's amazing how many people write me and tell me how much the books helped them, and they write Catherine and, you know, how many people, and people, 3 million people come and read this stuff. So I know that I'm affecting people's lives in helping them deal with issues that heretofore they would have never dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware of any other cell? In other words, when you got to the other side, was it just you, or were there other multidimensional existences that were other yous or other selves going on simultaneously?
Well, I was not. When I got to the other side, there were other beings there, but, you know, I wasn't interested in them. And I was pretty self-absorbed. But I have absolutely no question that there are multiple dimensional realities.
Okay.
Because I passed through them.
Okay.
When I lay in that bed for 2 years, I never really acclimated back to this world for about 2 years.
Huh.
And I would be in, it was like a trance-like state, because I guess my body was trying to mend from all that electricity.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a hallucination, and I would move into different worlds.
Huh.
And I would pass into these worlds, Lance, and they were odd. Some people had clothing, others were energetic. You could see through them. You could see, and I was there in their world. They didn't notice me, but I could notice them.
Huh.
And then when I... You know, people always say, Daniel, where do you find these answers? Well, when you have a near-death experience and you have absolutely no idea what it is, and you know it's the single most real thing that's ever happened to you in your life,
mm-hmm.
you will find the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, did you read the Bible? I say, yeah. And they said, well, did you read Buddhism? I said, yeah. Did you read... The Art of the Golden Dawn and the Mysticism and Blavatsky and all that? I said, yeah.
Uh-huh.
They said, well, where did you find these answers? Quantum physics.
Oh, really? I love it.
Theoretical dynamics in quantum physics gives you the best answers to explain the places I've been.
Wow.
I mean, philosophy gives you a way to interpret it.
Yeah.
But the validity of its existence I found in quantum mechanics.
Wow. Can you tell us who's running the world today, and why is there so much corruption, greed, and evil?
Well, godless capitalism is the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I, me, me, me.
Yeah, yeah.
Not us, us, us. And business is war.
Mm-hmm.
And when your business has become war, then you lose consciousness.
Mm.
And it's driven that way.
Yeah.
We're in a society that's debt. Every time you spend, people don't realize that every time you spend a dollar, you declare you owe a debt.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve System in our banking system is about debt.
Mm, exactly.
It has nothing to do with being even and making money. You don't make any money. You generate paper that lessens its value and creates debt. Look at the dollar. The dollar is worth 42 cents in England, and who in the hell, think about England. It's the size of Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And our money's worth nothing, but that's because they want to collapse the money.
Is that
the only way you can initiate a Western Hemisphere regional business grouping is to collapse the dollar and then initiate the new monies, the euro, and make a European Union. You're going to have an African Union, an Asian Union, and a European Union.
And a North American
Union. Then you have the blocks. You have the marketing blocks, and you have it regionally coordinated. Then everybody's just a consumer.
Well, now, is there any way out of all this, or is it just a matter of us moving towards spirit and consciousness and knowing who we are, you know?
Oh, no, we'll win.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, worry about all that.
That's what I wanted to know.
Let them have all the fun they think they're going to have.
So, in other words, they're going to get theirs sooner or later.
Remember the panoramic life review?
Yeah.
Nobody gets away with anything, Lance.
Not one.
I just laugh, you know, and going about my business, because I don't have to get mad.
Yeah.
Because they're going to go through exactly what they put people through.
And they're going to go through everything that they've inflicted on everyone
else. Look at Hitler.
Oh, my God. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes.
Hey, party on. I don't want any, you know, I'm out of that. I don't do it anymore. I mean, I apologize to people just as fast as I get mad about it, and I'm not that. But the world, when you come to the end of a 5,000-year period, and this happens all the time because geology has done core drillings, and you see the global warming. You know, what people don't realize that global warming is foretelling an ice age.
Yes. Tell us some more about what's coming in our future.
Well, our future is going to be what we make of it.
Hmm.
But global warming begins an ice age. You know, if the Gulf Stream moves another 3 inches, and I mean, you know, that's a pretty wide berth of water. If it moves another 3 inches, Europe's gone. I mean, England is gone.
It'll freeze.
It'll freeze over in a day.
Yeah.
And these things, and what you got to look at is, you look at Greenland melting. And if Greenland's melting, Greenland melted 19 billion more tons of ice.
Mm.
19 billion tons.
Hmm.
More of ice melted in Greenland than did last year this year.
Wow.
And what's important about that? Desalinization.
Huh.
Once you turn that salt water, which is what holds that Gulf Stream, and the fresher the water is, the more it's going to move it.
Huh. Wow. Well, there's nothing we can do to stop that, isn't that?
Not move to England.
So, are you still concerned about, you know, where you live and earthquakes and the rest of it, or is that, are you beyond that?
No, I pay attention.
Yeah.
I believe there's going to be a severe earthquake in the Madrid Fault.
Okay.
When I saw it in the vision and all the destruction that I saw, when I saw Katrina, I thought maybe it wasn't an earthquake, that it was going to be Katrina. And that this would be the point where America would really be pushed to economic collapse.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, in laws and mandated unfunding, we are like $56 trillion in debt.
Oh, yeah.
And under the funding mechanism, every man, woman, and child in America owes $230,000.
Mm.
So if you don't have $230,000 cash on you right now, that means this country's already collapsed.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's inevitable. The financial collapse is probably inevitable.
Yeah, no, it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, of course, the globalists are bringing it about so they can take over everything and start their new world order.
I agree.
Yeah, well, what you're saying is everybody that does that is going to still have to have their life review. And
yeah, I'm not worried about it. I mean,
yeah,
I'm here. I chose to be here at this time because I knew I could make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And also that the divine architect believes that each of us has the ability and we'll come together.
Mm-hmm.
We will win. It's like a song that was from Traffic. You can strip me of everything, including my pride, but my spirit's something that no one can destroy.
Yeah, wonderful. Tell us a little bit about the divine architect. I know people use words like God, the creator, the source, all that is, goddess, and so on. What's your sense of that energy?
Well, God is a German word.
Okay.
Well, look how funny this is. When Gutenberg invented the press, he didn't have a zero. He had a star.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a double, what do you call it, a diamond.
Uh-huh.
No, a inverted triangle, two triangles.
Okay.
And so when everybody used the term GD, and so what they did was, so you'd know it was God, to separate the term, they put this star in there, this double-sided pyramid, which eventually became a zero, became an O.
Oh.
So God's a German word, means GD.
Oh,
and that's how they encapsulated, because it was too long to write it.
Uh-huh.
So it just became GD.
Huh.
So there is a divine architect.
Okay.
It's not some white guy with a beard.
Okay.
It's consciousness. And it expands far beyond what we call our universe.
Huh.
Wow. So our ability to interpret that, number one, no one has the capacity except maybe Pat Robinson, but God talks to him. I'm so glad when God told him we were going to have a nuclear attack in America that God decided to tell Pat that, did not let it happen. You know what?
I take it you're not a big supporter of organized religion.
I think it's stupid.
Well, I do too. Would you? So, what about the Vatican and the Catholic Church? Is that just a big power play?
No. Now, all you want to do is scare people to death. I mean, religion is created to give people a perspective on how it all works, and that there is purpose in it. That's not a meandering movement, but. Most religions are all about fear.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, everybody's going to hell. I mean, think about this. When you've been dead, about 95% of everything you've ever been told turns into a lie.
Huh, wow.
It just turns into a lie. Why?
Yeah.
I'm guilty of the original sin.
Huh.
What some people were doing in the desert 5,000 years ago, I'm guilty of it.
Huh.
I didn't buy that when I was 10 years old. I'm certainly not buying it now.
Yeah, I've never bought it either. What about past lives?
Okay, now, in my near-death experience, I had absolutely nothing that would relate to past lives.
Okay.
Reincarnation.
Okay.
All right, but being around people like... I've been on the tour now 28 years.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen the best there is. And some of the biggest frauds there is.
Okay.
But when you sit around Brian Weiss and Winifred Lucas and Raymond Moody and John Mack, and you listen to psychiatrists talk, and they're as amazed at the results that they have come to from doing regression therapy.
Uh-huh.
And it infuses in you, Lance, that there is not only that this is possible, but that it's highly likely. And John Mack, who is probably one of the coolest guys there's ever been, till he stepped in front of that bus.
Uh-huh.
And John has such a clinical mind that when you listen to him, you have to believe him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't not only believe it, but I think it's very probable, without any question, that there is this.
That there is reincarnation.
Yeah, that there is multiple dimensions and reasons why people will come more than one.
Right, right.
I don't believe all that karma business.
Right, right.
You know, because if I fail, then I just fail.
Yeah, and you just get to look at that at the end. Danion, this hour has flown by. Would you please mention your website again so people can find your books and your writings and the rest?
Yes, Danion.com, just my first name, DanionBrinkley. And it's just that's my name, but it's just Danion.com, and it's called Brink's Giant Eagle. You just go over to the left-hand side and push Brink's Giant Eagle, and we don't sell a lot of stuff. I mean, we sell a lot of books on the website, and then people come and write, but everything is on that site, and I hope everybody decides to buy a book or come and join we have a newsletter that goes out every month, and it's not up on the site because we...
All right, thanks, Daniel.
Daniel.com, and thanks, Lance.
Okay, I want you back.
Anytime.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.